We will hear from Greg Owens, a paramedic, who in the hospital when a Texas Ranger came in who had a near-death experience. I'd heard that he was an atheist. You know if that was true? Okay, he was an atheist until he had his near-death experience. We did try to get in touch with the Texas Ranger, but we couldn't locate him. The Texas Ranger's experience wasn't as in-depth as some, but I think there are some excellent points that will be brought out that reinforce the reality of near-death experiences.
Goodness. Howdy. My name is Greg Owens. I am living here locally. However, I'm from a different country, Texas. And I moved here in 1999. And before that, I worked in emergency medicine. I first started out with my family-owned business. My uncle owned an EMS county ambulance service. And I got involved in it very lightly at first and then kind of built into it. But then I became interested when I found out I knew things or didn't know things that I didn't know that I didn't know. So one thing led to another, and I kind of went up the ranks and became a paramedic, did a short term in nursing school, but never became an RN, almost became a PA, but did go to the Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine, where I obtained a certification back then. Now it's a licensure, but anyway, to make a long story short, I was in emergency medicine for 17 years. I have probably seen, on the low side, at least 2,000 people pass from this life into whatever's next. And in that time, you get to see a lot of things, and the story that I'm about to tell you is why I'm here tonight. There was this Texas Ranger who I had come to know over my tenure of working in a hospital trauma center. And when somebody comes in and has a wreck, the police or authorities come and they investigate and they ask questions of the family and injured people and so forth, survivors, witnesses, you name it. And over the period of time, you get to understand and create some relationships with people. And this Texas Ranger, who would come in from time to time, over the last year I was in medicine, we began to talk, and he retired, and about a year later, he came back in, not walking in, but on an ambulance stretcher with a cardiopulmonary resuscitated device called a thumper. It's a mechanical CPR device that compresses your chest, and then it breathes for you while you're being brought in from going from one place to another. So he was brought in under the auspices of no pulse and no respirations that were spontaneous. Once we got him into the emergency department, this man who we recognized, how many people either have been in medicine or are in medicine. Now, can I see by a show of hands? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, good. So the arrhythmia that this man had was, if you're from way back when, it was called EMD, or electromechanical disassociation. I think around in 2007, it was retermed as PEA, pulseless electrical activity. So that's what this man had. So what it means is you can have on the electrical EKG monitor or ECG monitor, you see electrical activity. But when you check for a carotid pulse, there is no pulse, meaning no blood supply is perfusing to the brain. We worked on this man for about 40 to 45 minutes until we could get him stabilized up to enough to take him up to the intensive care unit. He never retained spontaneous respirations in the emergency department, but we did get a pulse back on him, enough to say, we're not going to call him, meaning you're not dead yet. So many times, once you transfer someone up to the intensive care unit, you'd never know the rest of the history that happens. So about 2 weeks after this happened, the oncoming shift, I was working 12-hour shifts, and the people that I worked with when we took them up to the ICU, 2 weeks later, we're all working again because of the way the rotations work. So the oncoming shift to relieve us, that shift change at 6:45 was there 2 hours earlier. And we were like, what's going on? And so they come and take report. We deliver our patients over to the oncoming shift, and we were told to go wait in the hospital auditorium slash chapel. And we're like, what's going on? So the ED doctor's there, the director of nurses there, all the ED staff that was working on this man was there, same people, respiratory therapists, lab people, radiology techs, everybody was there. And we're thinking like, gosh, what's getting ready to happen? They must be getting ready to fire us all or something. What do we do wrong? You know, what do we do wrong? So about 10 minutes after we're waiting in there, the hospital administrator comes in, the director of nurses comes in, the ICU director and the ER director come in. And we're going like, we must have really screwed up bad. Then we see the hospital chaplains from, it was a big hospital system, about four of them come in and about maybe four or five social workers. I'm like, this is really strange. We must have really, really messed up. So about that time, one door opens up and here comes this man, this Texas Ranger that we had previously resuscitated and taken up to the ICU, and he comes in, they're wheeling him in a wheelchair, because when you're in the hospital and you're a patient, you get wheeled around in a wheelchair whether you like it or not, or you're on a stretcher. So he comes in and he talks to us and he begins to tell us why he is here. And he begins to tell this story of when he woke up and regained consciousness in the intensive care unit, he began to have these thoughts, and he began to talk about them. And the thoughts that he talked about were when he was in the emergency department. It was found out later on because an astute intensive care unit nurse began to think, this is strange. I'm going to go pull the ER record, and I'm going to go look and see what he's saying. Does it match up with what he's saying? And lo and behold, it did. And down to the minute, this man was able to recall what and when drugs were given, when he was in PEA or EMD, when CPR was stopped, when it was started again, what drugs were given. And what really kind of got to me, and this is why it stuck with me all these years, is that he recalled a joke that I had told while we were working on him. Now, I'm outing myself here. When you're in emergency medicine, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's proper. I'm not saying it's ethically the right thing to do. But when you're dealing in stressful situations and you have life and death going on, sometimes you like to relieve a little bit of stress. And I had told this joke. It was kind of randy. I won't repeat it here tonight. But he remembered this joke verbatim and told it to all of us. And everybody in the room is going like, I remember that joke. And social workers and the chaplains were there for our support to see if that's something that we needed some help with. And I said, I think I would just like to go home and have a nice glass of wine and then go to bed to deal with this. And I haven't spoke about it too much. I have a friend in the room here, Greg Warren, that invited me to come here back in September, October. It's my first time here. This is my second time here. That's my story. It's kind of short, not really big, but from a medical perspective, when he told me and we got to hear and see on the record what he was saying, and he could spout it off to us when we all got together and we had the records before us, it kind of makes you think and wonder. One of the things about this highway patrolman, Texas Ranger, when I did get to know him, he told me that he was an atheist. And I asked him afterwards, and I said, what's your perspective on this? And he goes, I don't know. He says, I'm not saying there's something afterwards. I'm not saying there is or there isn't. I'm just telling you about my experience. And I said, well, can you tell me where were you And he goes, I was up in the corner of the room looking down at everybody. And I'm like, okay. And I have read about that. I've heard about that. I've talked to other people and my colleagues in medicine and emergency medicine where they have talked to other people. I've heard that experience where they're up in the corner of a room. I said, did that change your perspective about your thoughts about your belief system or anything like that? He goes, no, I'm still an atheist. I'm like, okay. So from that perspective, nothing changed for him. But I just wanted to tell you my story vicariously and my direct experience with hearing what this man had to say and his experience. So thank you for your time.
So I think the question I have for you, as you were talking, I was thinking about how I haven't necessarily had a near-death experience, and you're talking about someone else, so I kind of identified with you a little bit. What I was wondering is this experience that you've described that you witnessed, you know, you were part of that story. How has it affected you, and how has it maybe created maybe a pseudo near-death experience for yourself? So your connection with the other side, so to speak. I noticed when Sean was talking, all of a sudden I remembered an experience I had in college where I had an experience. It wasn't necessarily a near-death experience, but I could call it that, I guess. And so I forgot. So I'm wondering about your experience and what you've learned and how that affects your spirituality or your knowledge of these things.
Spiritually speaking, I don't think it's changed me spiritually. My personal belief system is what it is. It's not that much different than probably a lot of people here in this room. It didn't make it more real for me or make it less real because I think I was pretty firm knowing what I know and my relationship with God, or if you have a higher power, whatever that may be for each one of you that are in the room tonight. So that didn't change. Prior to this experience, though, over my period of being in emergency medicine of 17 years, flying all over the world, picking up people in strange situations in jungles and countries that I probably shouldn't have ever been in, and in those scenarios, being out of the U.S., were more tame than being in the U.S. when I was a paramedic on the streets in Texas, in Dallas, and in Austin, and in parts in between. I had some personal, I wouldn't call them near-death experiences, but all I can say is that there are certain things that run through your mind, and in my scenario, I was shot at 7 times during my tenure as an emergency medical technician and as a paramedic, total. And certain things kind of run through your mind. I thinking that I probably shouldn't be standing right here before you tonight. But all I can think of and know is that at that point in time, God must have a plan for me in my life. And that continually evolves and unfolds daily, as it does for everybody else in here. I just wanted to say that I've had some bumps along the way, and those 7 bumps were pretty significant. I've tried to work through those and de-stress through those, and I think I've come around pretty good in trying to talk about those things. I don't talk about them all the time, but this talk tonight, outside of speaking with Greg last year in September, that was the first time I had talked about that experience that I shared with you tonight back in September, October of last year, since I left medicine in 1999. I have a different career now, so hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for sharing that experience. I think that sounds like a very significant experience for all of us to learn and gain from. And from, I guess, my understanding is that scientific advances are starting to understand consciousness a little bit better, and that perhaps for those who may be in what we one time considered an unconscious or comatose state, that they may still be conscious on some level. I guess I'm wanting to gain a little bit of clarity that it sounds like that may have had an adverse effect on perhaps the ranger, the patient who was quote-unquote unconscious at the time, who may have actually in fact been in a whatever spiritual conscious state, near-death state. Do you mind clarifying that just a little bit so that we can kind of understand how we can learn from that?
His state, we worked on resuscitating him for about 40, 45 minutes. And there were periods of time of at least 7 to 10 minutes where this man did not have a palpable pulse. For most practical purposes, when you don't have blood flow to your brain, you've got about maybe 5 minutes, depending on the scenario, and it was warm outside. So usually after about 5 or 10 minutes, the ratio and proportion of people that survive having no pulse and no spontaneous respirations, surviving and leaving the hospital, the morbidity and mortality rates of people that come in and have CPR are very, very low survival rates. This man's perspective, his primary purpose in coming in to speak with us on that morning was to say, thank you for not stopping. Thank you for keep working on me. That was his primary purpose. I want to make sure that's very clear and everybody understands that. The secondary thing was all the ancillary things and technical things that he could share and did share that matched the emergency department written, documented record and the order and the time and the sequence of when it happened, which is kind of eerie. If you've never had somebody say, you did this, 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 and this at this time down to the minute, and be able to see that without ever seeing the medical record himself.
So with that information, he was, you consider him clinically dead, and yet he came back with that.
I would consider him clinically dead.
Yeah.
I have probably seen, like I think I said earlier, over 2,000 people die over my period of 17 years. Maybe more. Maybe have helped save and populate enough to populate a small city, maybe 250,000. Not by myself, as a team member. I have nobody working in medicine does things. No man is an island. You always work as a team. I can't take credit for any of that. But all my team members and colleagues, the doctors and the nurses and the paramedics and the fire department staff that I worked with and police officers and medics. I mean, I have survived 2 helicopter crashes as well. So I'm thinking, like, I should be dead. But from that perspective, yeah, that's what it is.
Thank you for sharing that experience. I didn't mean it to sound like I was making it a negative about you.
No.
I just know that under when physicians are working with patients under anesthetics and maybe pregnant women with unborn fetus, that's just kind of more of a regulation of trying to be more careful because of different states of consciousness and things like that. I don't know if that's something we can gain, but I'm really glad that he thanked you for working on him so long to resuscitate him.
Yeah.
Thank you.